Thank you. What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite to Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all?
I hope we're on the air, Alan. I think the intro has already played.
Okay.
But this is what happened to me last night when we called in.
You're listening to
the
Jackie the True and Sweet Liberty.
Thank you.
And now, here's your host, Jackie the True.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday. It is the 7th of December in the year 2004, and this is, of course, today is the anniversary of the day that will live in infamy, folks, the day that Pearl Harbor was intentionally attacked. Well, let's say the orchestration, the attack by Japan on Pearl Harbor was orchestrated to get Americans into the war spirit for the Second World War. And that isn't what we're talking about tonight, but I did want to acknowledge and mention it and make sure that you all know that what happened on December 7th back in 1941 was a magnificent orchestrated production, planned and implemented by the creatures who were already in control of the U.S. government under the President FDR at the time. Alan Watt is with us tonight. And I, first of all, we'll do our spiritual message, and this is the one right in front of me from Psalm 139, verses 23-24. Search me, Father, know my heart. Test me, know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. And when I say that, I wonder if there are any of us who don't have some offensive ways that we aren't even aware of, folks. I know, I feel that that would be the case for me, unintentionally, of course. And last night, we had some really weird technical difficulties, unexplainable. And Alan is with us back again this evening. We did get on the air on the shortwave last night at 9:30, right after the half-hour break. And yet I know a lot of our shortwave listeners gave up because you thought all you were going to hear is music. And the thing that amazed me last night, you all, is when Alan said that he didn't think we were on the air, it was about 20 after or 25 after, because all that was being played on shortwave was music. I said, no, we must be on the air or our listeners would be ringing the phone off the hook. And for some unknown reason, the phone did not ring last night. So Ellen and I did the first 20, well, I was about 10 minutes getting him connected, and we did about 20 minutes all by ourselves. So what we are going to do this evening, for the sake of those of you who missed all of the broadcasts last night, Alan is going to recover some of what he was discussing last night that I feel is very relevant and really want you to have the opportunity to hear. And Alan, thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure that we're finally on.
Yeah. So, and you're just coming loud and clear tonight.
Yeah, well, strange things are happening. Huh?
I know, and you know, we reconciled the time.
Yeah.
About what, an hour and a half before the broadcast.
Yeah, but then my clock is still 2 minutes too here, so I guess something's happened.
Folks, it just really is weird because he was late calling me last night, and then tonight I called him and said, let's get our clock synchronized here. And he was going to call at 5 till, and right on the hour at 9 o'clock, I was calling Alan to say, hurry up. And his clock was 5 minutes slow.
Yep.
Okay, Alan.
Yep.
Enough of me.
It's the energy crisis, the batteries. Yeah.
You think it is?
Must be, yeah.
Well, at least we can laugh about it, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, I don't know, maybe we'd be pulling our hair out.
Well, that can happen, too.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about, you talked about last night, is what you have observed and heard on different radio broadcasts. And we had a conversation on the weekend when you were sharing some of this with me, and I felt it was relevant for our listeners to be able to hear your take on this, Alan.
Yeah.
If you would
kind. What always gets me, to be honest with you, is that in this system that we are forced to live under, there's so much profit money to be made off of misery, human misery. And it's, you know, I find that shortwave for years has been, in a sense, providing alternate remedies for illnesses, but now it's become such an incredibly big business. And and quite frankly, some of the products which are being sold on the shortwave are just stuff that's been recycled from years ago that didn't work then. And of course you've got a new generation of people who are in desperate pain or whatever, who are willing to try anything and spend the big bucks to try and relieve some of their pain.
I don't recall you saying this before, that some of the products that you hear advertised,
yeah,
are actually things that didn't work the first go round. And
yeah, because that's what happens. They come out with something which is always touted as being brand new and a miracle cure for something or other. And of course, once they have enough people who bought it over the course of a year or so, then they know it doesn't work. So then, and then they've got something else ready to take over, of course, some other miracle cure.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an endless cycle of people trying to get pain relief. And these characters who are shameless, who make incredible profits off their misery. And, you know, that tends to get to me, that kind of thing.
Yes, and
because it is shameless, you know. It's a shameless exploitation of people.
You see, what you're doing right now is speaking generically.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that you even want to or could, but I suppose if you and I were having a conversation where we had unlimited time,
yeah,
I'd be saying, give me an example or two. Because
I think most of the listeners would understand.
Okay.
But when they hear a product, for instance, being touted as incredible, now you got to listen to the legal language that's being used, because they're giving you a legal warning, and that's for future court cases.
And
it's not credible. It's incredible. It is not credible. Understand?
Yes, and I've used that word a lot when mm-hmm. something seemed awesome, or I'd say, oh, this was just incredible.
Yeah.
And that was really the wrong usage of that word then.
Yeah, but I think these guys are using it deliberately, because technically it's a legal warning that buyer beware, you know. And they've told you it isn't credible.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same when they use the word fantastic. It's these fantasia.
Fantasy?
Yeah. And so they use this terminology as they sell these products, and it's a legal off the hook for them if there's any comeback. They have told you.
They have told you it's incredible and fantastic.
It's a miracle.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was one guy who was they brought him on a few times on the shortwave, on one of the main daily shows, and this guy would have been great in the 1800s as a snake oil salesman, and he comes out with a story which again should only fit into the 1800s, but he's still doing it and making money off it. And that's that God gave him the formula for this fantastic soap.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote it on the wall.
It was written on the wall. You know, Steve Jacobson was visiting, and of course Steve, you know, is most known for the audio documentary, so to speak, that he did on media mind control.
Yeah.
And he had actually worked in the advertising industry in New York, and he got to realizing the actual mind control methods that are used to sell. And that was what led him to the long research and the tape that he did, which, by the way, folks, is available, and you can go to sweetliberty.org and go into the resources section under recommended listening, and you will be able to find them. But he saw an advertisement in a magazine, a two-page slick advertisement, and he started laughing so hard tears were rolling down his face. He said they're actually now using God to sell a product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We want to take a call?
We'll see if it's a complaint.
Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm on the air right now.
Yes, you are. Who's calling?
This is George calling.
Hi, George.
I'd like to ask the gentleman a question. I believe he's been on several weeks back talking about some of the powerful people throughout the world. Is that correct?
Yes, probably yes. Do you want to get specific, George?
Yes. I believe the conversation went along with what I believe in, that a few hundred people throughout the world are very closely related, oftentimes by blood, or marriage, or business interests, or social levels, or somewhere in the power structure.
Yes.
And they wield tremendous power throughout the entire world and in the United States.
Yes. George, did you have a question, dear?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, no, I got it. Now, you know that geographically, oftentimes these people live very close together, such as, say, in New York City or some of the resort areas of the world. And in your resource, have you ever done any a study to find out how closely they are geographically, so they could meet?
George, the way we're set up here, he can hear your question, but you're going to have to hang up to hear his answer, dear.
Okay.
Is this just a one-part question? Is that what you wanted to know?
Well, that's part of it. Now, that I said that geographically, they're close.
Uh-huh.
And also, in analyzing the major businesses throughout the world and in this country, we see that there are a lot of monopolies. And it seems to me that if we could have a list of these major monopolies in the world, which you could find out just by financial research, that you could put the two together, and that this ruling group throughout the world will have a strong control of the business monopolies throughout the entire world.
Okay, we'll ask Alan to address that.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, George. Okay, Alan?
Yeah, he's quite right. They do. I mean, the MO is the signs and symptoms of a disease that you look for. And the signs and symptoms of this disease are always the same. Ancient Egypt, for instance, was just a bigger version of Sumer and Babylon. And they had the most incredible wealth amongst a few people of nobility, and they had also the most incredible poverty living side by side.
In Sumer?
Yeah.
6,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this information, is it available for people, Alan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been so many records. They're still digging up clay tablets at Sumer with so much information on them. They had receipts. They had a cashless society at one point, where they used tokens instead of the gold and so on, almost like a checking type society, checkbook type society. You even got receipts at the supermarkets that they went to. They baked the thing in a clay oven for 15 minutes, and that's how long it took to get your receipt. You know, they found thousands and thousands of shipping receipts for merchants who were putting their goods into ships for export abroad.
So if they were that far advanced, yeah, why wouldn't they have at least have had papyrus or something to write on?
The what?
Well, paper.
Oh, well,
I'm sure
you know that they probably did, but the paper is so much more delicate and doesn't withstand the climate and so on, the weather, you know, perishes.
So you're saying that they did that intentionally for future generations?
It's very possible. It's also possible that it was a two-tiered system, just like today, where you have... See, today, everything runs actually on a three-tiered system. There are always three levels of reality or science coexisting at the same time, and whatever is given to the public as being the latest gizmo or gadget is actually antique. At the higher level of science, which is then given to sections of the CIA, for instance, and there's another, the real science is kept into the hands of a very few people at the top. And they're so far ahead scientifically that everything that we see on the shelves is actually obsolete. You know? And I don't think it's been any different at any time. And so for the general public consumer, I'm sure the clay tablets were just dandy and they were told that was the latest thing that they had. You know? Yeah. They found electric batteries, acid batteries, and they're in the Cairo Museum. They were dug up in Egypt. They found them elsewhere, even in what was Persia, Iran, and Iraq. So they had electricity at one point. And again, that would be for the few as well. So the world is run by secrecy, and power is never shared, and knowledge is power. And of course, these guys use science to wield their power and maintain their power over the people at all times. But as I say, the MO of these people down through the centuries is always the same. They run the religious business, whichever religion they make dominant for a people, they run it. They also run the pharmaceutical industry. They had that in ancient Egypt too. They run the herbal industry at the same time. They run the legal system, and they run the illegal system, and they also run the illegal drug system. So and prostitution and so on. All of these things have been run by them from the most earliest of times.
And when we say them,
yeah,
who are we saying?
Talking about an elite who have their own religion, their own belief system, which differs from everyone else's. And they believe that they spiritually, their spirit is different from that of Joe Average. They believe that they were a separate created race, you might say, spiritually and physically, from Joe Average.
So they actually believe in the eternity of the spirit, of the soul, or...
Yeah, what they believe is that they themselves were banished or cast out. And this is where the whole fallen angel theology comes from. And because they were created higher than man, they still retain special powers when they arrived here. And through pure will, through willing it to happen, they created their own physical bodies, which they claim were perfect, and they could do amazing things psychically with telekinesis and so on. But when they started to interbreed with the native people, the humans here, they began to lose those powers, and so then they returned to the intensive inbreeding to try to get back to what they were.
And I remember you saying this on the more recent broadcast that we've done together.
Yeah.
And you say, what you said is, when they began interbreeding with the humans here, which sounds like, okay, where did they come from, if not from here?
Yeah. Well, they believe, again, that there was a creator. There's no doubt that they believe there was a creator.
Or a maker.
Mm-hmm. But they rebelled, and that's where, again, the rebellion comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And because they believed they had all the powers of the date of the creator himself. And, of course, that's where all your Luciferian doctrine comes from, is from the same theology. That's why the symbols are all over the world of the Lucifer and all its guises, you know, the light bringer. And so this is an ancient religion which belongs to an inbred special few.
And last night, just as we were going off the air,
mm-hmm.
you were talking about the pure white, the royalty and all that.
Yeah.
That gets so confusing for me, because...
Yeah, I mean, even in Sumer, too, they did find some of the royalty in a grave, underground grave, very deep and large, and they'd been buried with all their servants who were poisoned, and they found the wigs that the royalty wore. They wore wigs made from the hair of the local people, which was black. That they themselves had red or blonde hair. And it's the same in Egypt. You find the wigs in all the tombs. So the nobility literally were a different race from the people they lorded over.
And one of our listeners called, and I don't know if we were still on the air together when he, at the time, during that time that he called, but he, oh, I know what it was, Alan. It was when I was replaying the broadcast that we had done, 7 of them.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't know that they were rebroadcast, and he called that night, and he said that he had just seen, I believe it was a documentary, and they showed, it was an older documentary that they had replayed on one of the, I believe, networks, and that they showed a mummy that they dug up from ancient China, and
oh, yeah,
that it was
red
actually
mummies, yeah.
Red-haired.
Mm-hmm.
Red-haired.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well... I just want you to know that this whole issue of this, you know, right now, the at least it appears this way, Alan,
uh-huh.
That the white race is being eliminated. And if those rulers were of the pure white race, mm-hmm. why would they want the white race eliminated?
Because they do not, they might look like you, but they don't believe they are the same as you. You're an inferior species to them. Your skin might be white, but it takes more than that to belong to them, you see, genetically.
Hmm.
They don't identify with you. The peasant of America is no different from the peasant of China to them.
Hmm.
And we're all peasants as far as they're concerned. There's no love for the people they rule over whatsoever.
Well, we know that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back in Sumer, the same as it is today, it is a few, a whole lot less or fewer of them than there are the, quote, masses.
Yeah.
So they had to have their own minions, their useful idiots,
mm-hmm.
that were carrying out so much of their plan, just
oh, yeah.
as it is
yeah.
today.
Mm-hmm. No different. You see, if you the first con game was to create money, and it doesn't matter what money is. As soon as the public believe that money is better than real goods for barter, then they own you and they own the whole system, because they can put you into a form of slavery so easily through taxation and so on. And we've watched countries starve to death, not because it didn't have food, but because it didn't have money. It's ridiculous. See, money is a con game.
Well, look at the depressions that have been created, and
well,
all they
Irish
had to do.
Well, the Irish famine was a beautiful one, where you know, you had people living in a country which had lush fields of lots of different kinds of grain, and because the potatoes, just the potatoes, had a blight, they had to starve to death, while their exports. Again, owned by a handful of people who owned most of the land.
I just lost the volume in your voice. Did you do something?
No.
Wow.
No.
We just lost a lot of volume here.
Oh, okay. I can hear you just the same.
Okay.
Yeah. But people starved to death in the middle of all this grain and oats and all the rest of it because they were not allowed to touch it because they didn't have money to buy it.
Well, and it also, the land belonged to the landed gentry from England.
That's right, yeah.
So if one of those Irish peasants was even caught killing a rabbit,
yeah,
that might have been close to the road, close enough that they would actually be put to death.
Yes, or they'd deport you to Australia. That was how they populated Australia.
Or America.
Mm-hmm. And so, these guys have been at this for thousands of years. And coin, the word coin, which they introduced, comes from koin, which is money. Money, coin, koin is priest.
Yeah.
It's all interrelated because it was the first priest they sent out that introduced the money system.
Your voice level is down so far, it's unbelievable.
Okay.
And there's nothing that you've done differently.
No, not a thing.
Okay.
So this money is the first con game, and that is the capstone. Whoever, as long as they have a society who believes that when they're hungry they have to spend this coin to buy food rather than go and grow it or exchange for it, then that system is owned.
Mm-hmm.
It's owned completely. And everything under that system, that's garments, everything, is dependent on the money boys.
Yes.
And strangely enough, you have a few billion people in the world who are trained in this system to accept it as it's given to them, who never even know that about 12 families hand out the checks to governments across the world, and nothing real is ever exchanged. It's just paper.
Yes, and getting back to George's question...
Yeah.
I don't know if you did address it fully. What his question was that he has noticed, at least I believe he was saying, that many of these so-called elite today live close to one another, like in New York and maybe in other large major cities,
yeah,
so that they can meet together. And also he was wondering if those are the same ones that are in control of the major industries.
Well, there's no doubt they are, absolutely. In fact, if you do go and do searches for corporate leaders and see how many companies they actually own, it boggles the mind. I have seen one guy, what he owns, and Prince Charles is on his polo team. And he's known for owning one main business in Canada, and yet I've seen all the other companies he owns, and it's about eight pages long.
I've got a list here of allegedly businesses owned or controlled from behind the scenes by the Rockefellers,
yeah,
and the list goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yes.
And I've had this for quite a few years. Chuck and I were going over it several years ago and wondered if it were true, and if it is there anything that they don't own other than a little mom and pop place that today they're all struggling for survival?
Yeah, yeah. They own pretty well everything that matters in the system. It is their system entirely. You know, they create the money. They also buy the debt, as it's called. It's all the same people who do it all. And they can raise countries up to be great. They can crash them whenever they want to and move elsewhere, as they have done. What you have really from Sumer is empire building. And bit by bit, you find characters in history arising out of nowhere and either conquering the old empire and creating a larger one.
Yes, Alan.
Yes.
You should hold this thought because the music is playing.
Uh-huh.
And it will be overriding your voice. We're going to take a short 60-second break here, folks. And we will be back with Alan. And I don't know what's happened, Alan, because the meter reading on your voice level is very low. And it just doesn't make sense. Folks, we'll be right back.
years ahead of the dominant media. Find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, folks, we're back again. I want to give you my address once again, in case you didn't take it down. And then we're going to give you Alan's address, which we promised to do last night, and I have it in front of me, because Alan doesn't remember.
Yeah, I don't know where I live.
My address, folks, for those of you who aren't and would like to be contributing, hold here just a minute. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Jackie, it's me, Gloria. I just wanted to say the show's coming in very well.
Oh, thank
you. But no fluctuations at all, even though you're seeing things on the meter.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Thanks for that, Gloria.
Okay.
I was concerned. Bye-bye. All right. I was wondering if that was happening again, Alan, where your voice level here on my meter, it dropped down about 4 or 5 notches. Hello?
Hi, Jackie, Eleanor.
Yeah, Eleanor.
Alan has no problem at all. It's only in your local...
Okay. Thank you, honey.
And maybe you should ask him about that government agency that said they knew about contrails, but they were a national security item.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Thanks.
Cheers.
Okay, bye. All right, let me give you my address. You heard that question, yes, Alan?
Yeah.
Okay, let me give you my address, folks. And thanks for calling in, Eleanor and Gloria, so then I can quit worrying about whether or not you're hearing him, okay? My address, if you are not and you would like to be helping to keep this broadcast going, the address is Jackie Petrou, P-A-T-R-U, P.O. Box 190, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. And before I forget, I want to remind you, in case you are tuning in this week and hadn't been last week, Sweet Liberty, with me as your host, is on Monday through Wednesday now, Thursday nights on Sweet Liberty. Our guest host is Jeff Bennett. We're trying this for the month of December, folks. And so that is going to help also. It gives you an opportunity to hear Jeff, and it gives us an opportunity, hopefully, to catch up with this way, way, way out-of-sight airtime bill. Alan's address, I want to tell you why I'm giving it to you, in case you weren't here last night. Alan has put together 2 booklets. He did this back in 98, 99, when he was on the air with us very, very frequently. And what it does, because if you didn't hear him then, he just covered he covered ancient history and the language and so much that would almost be impossible to repeat, but the booklets that he has put together, it tells the story. Alan spent his time writing to explain the copies, the photocopies, and photos and reports that are in the booklets. And anyone that I've talked to that has gotten them has been just so grateful that Alan has made them available. You can get these booklets for $20 each. And he says that you should definitely, if you're only getting one, get the first one. Yes, Alan?
Yeah.
And Alan has said that if you cannot afford the $20 per book, and that does cover the shipping and handling. If you cannot afford it, send what you can, because he just wants to share the information. But I could be wrong when I'm saying this. I don't think that Alan is living on an unlimited budget, so I know that any of you who would order the books for less than 20 each, it would be because you sincerely want the information and truly cannot afford the full price. So now the address is Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, P.O. Box Holder. Or is it just Box Holder, Alan?
Box Holder.
Okay, I've got P.O. Box Holder here. Box Holder. So you send it. You don't send it to Alan Watt, folks. I'm sorry. You send it to Box Holder. Site, S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Esther, Ontario. Esther is E-S as in Samuel, T as in Thomas, A-I-R-E. Esther, Ontario. That's Canada, of course. And the postal code there is P as in Peter, 3, the numeral 3, and then E as in Edward, 4, N as in Nancy, 1, P3E4N1. Once again, Box Holder, Site 41, Box 4, Esther, Ontario, Peter. Okay, I'll just say the letters, P3E4N1. And if anybody didn't get it, you can call and we will repeat it again. Okay, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where were we?
We were basically talking about the empire builders as they moved down through the centuries. And whenever you get a character called the Great, for instance, you know that's one of their boys.
Like Alexander or Peter or...
That's right. Mm-hmm. And they were expanding and unifying vast territories to create a common culture and bring in their system. And that's what they're still doing worldwide. It's almost got there. And that's what the whole new world order is about. It's the total dominance of the entire planet under one rule by a small elite group of inbred people who believe that they are essentially gods in their own right. So that's what it's all been about.
And that's where the divine right of kings came from?
Oh, sure. I mean, as I say, they always give the authorized religion for the people to believe, which is always tends to make them submissive to rule. But they've always had their own inner religion. John Dee was one of the members or the advisors to Queen Elizabeth I. And he wrote about it because he actually, his code was 007. He was also a spy for Britain.
John Dee. Okay,
and,
remind me, who is John Dee?
John Dee, he wrote much of the Rosicrucian books of that period. But he also was steeped in the Kabbalah, and he explained much of their esoteric religion. And at that time only, he was writing for the nobility, and so no one else could read, basically, apart from the priests, who were also in on it, you know. And he was the first person to coin the term and give it a name, and it was called the British Empire. He coined it, the term British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And their duty and manifest destiny was to create little empires similar to their own across the world and ultimately unify them. And that is what the Council on Foreign Relations was set up to do. They are part of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. That is exactly what they're set up to do. I've got their books here, from their members' books going back to the 1930s. And they discussed the coming World War II. They discussed who would win it. They discussed having to save Russia at all costs. They also discussed America coming in perhaps by a surprise attack by Japan. This was a 1938 meeting that they held in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the future is planned. All of the future is planned, always.
And they work out the minute details as time goes by.
Yes, they do.
They lay the foundation for what they're... when I finally realized this was this Dodd, Mr. Dodd, who... He was on a congressional... hearing committee back in 52, I believe, Congressman
Norman, Dodd, yeah.
Norman, thank you. And he said that they went to the was it Carnegie Foundation,
yeah.
And they wanted to go through their papers, and the man there told them that they wouldn't mind, but that would be a little difficult because once the U.S. ratified the U.N. Charter, their work was finished, he said. And all of their meetings, that's what Norman Dodd wanted to look at. They were all in the storage, but he said, if you want to, you can go look. Norman Dodd did say that he believed that the man who allowed them to do this really didn't know what was in those meeting notes.
Mm-hmm.
But what came out of it, and this was back in 1906, Alan, they wanted to know, is there a way, if you wanted to change the culture of a people, and change it for good, is there any way better than war to do it? And they set up a council or committee to study it, and they came up with the answer, and they said, no, there's
yeah,
no way better.
Carol quickly said the same thing.
Yeah, okay, well.
He said you can accomplish more on a social level in 5 years of war
yeah.
than 50 years of peace.
Right, and this was 1906,
yeah.
and they decided they were going to have a war, and they already had picked the Balkan states.
Mm-hmm.
That they were going to do it, and that was in 1914, wasn't it, when the First World War finally broke out, Alan?
Yeah, right.
And also I had read that they decided they were going to hold the war off, that first, quote, Great War, until the Federal Reserve Act was passed here so that the American people could pay for it.
Yes.
And there we go, 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed. 1914, the war started, and what was it, 1917, when the U.S. got into it.
Yeah.
Americans. I shouldn't say the U.S. because it's always flesh and blood, Alan.
Oh, yeah.
Flesh and blood that fights the wars of the rich.
Oh, sure. And it's so disgusting to realize that it's all planned way in advance. Nothing is ever spontaneous. And they also have their plans made for after the war. They know who's going to win it because they control all sides.
Yes, I'm going to ask you if you would continue. I'm babysitting a young neighbor girl, and I think she's sleeping, and her mother's at the door to let her in. I have to leave the mic, so would you just continue? And I'm sorry, I have to miss what you're going to say.
Yeah,
I'll be back.
Okay. Yeah. Well. To say that there are traces of them down through history because they leave their MOs wherever they go. And they always introduce a religion for the people, which keeps them in submission. They always introduce a monetary system. Anything will do for money, doesn't matter what it is, as long as they control it. Many of their empires in the past have forbidden barter. And, of course, they're trying to forbid barter even right now. There are laws being passed in North America. They call it the underground economy. So they want everyone using their money, even if that money is simply a number, a bunch of numbers on a computer screen. And that's where it's going, ultimately. I think it was Lord Bertrand Russell who did an awful lot of work for the elite, helping with their plans, especially in the social change area and the educational field. He said ultimately, towards the end of the millennium and into the new, he said there'll be a cashless society where every citizen will be allowed or allocated so many credits per week, which cannot be saved up. They must use them that week. And that way no one else can rise above his fellow peasant, basically. And if you buck the system, you don't do your tolls or you break some of the rules, they will withhold your credits and you will suffer because you won't be able to feed yourself, pay your rent, and so on. Now, he wrote that in Education and the Good Life, and also The Road to Freedom, both written prior to the 1920s. So everything that's happening today was planned long, long ago. H.G. Wells was another one. He was a front man too. He had a whole team of people working. In fact, he had a whole building and a printing press to churn his books out. And professors who belonged to the Royal Institute of International Affairs from Cambridge University and Oxford supplied him with the material which he was to incorporate in his fiction books.
I'm back, Alan.
These fiction books, at that time they called it predictive programming. In other words, society will accept change when it seems familiar to them, and it's familiar because of the fiction they've been reading or even seeing in the cinemas.
I missed what, Alan, I'm back.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit of what you were saying, but I don't know who you were talking about.
Oh, I was mentioning H.G. Wells.
Okay.
And Bertrand Russell.
Right.
To show that they were actually writing about the end of the millennium back in 1905 in their books, and telling us what to expect, because they were part of the implementers. They worked on these plans for the elite. Lenin himself, Lenin was another one who was part of the elite. He was completely financed by the West, by the banks of New York and London. And Lenin in his books also said the same thing as H.G. Wells and Bertrand Russell concerning the future society towards the end of the millennium, where they'll have a Soviet-type system worldwide ran by bureaucrats and experts.
And when you say Soviet-type system?
Yeah.
I have mentioned this on the air before. The book that I have called Cogs in the Wheel, this is basically what they said in the book, Alan.
Yeah.
The Soviet Union was a huge national laboratory, as you call it.
Yeah.
Where they were doing their brainwashing and mind control on the people. That's why nobody could get out or in from the Soviet Union, and they literally claimed that they had, in 60 short years, had created a new species. And they called this new species Homo Sovieticus.
Yeah.
And that was to be the blueprint across, around the world for what they call the new man.
Yeah.
And the book is just spine-chilling, Alan.
Yes, and that's exactly what's taking place, though. We are seeing people today who have been inoculated with so many injections since birth to make them dumb and stupid.
Yes. Yeah.
And also to bring on diseases earlier in life.
Inoculations of diseases, yes, that's in the protocols. For our listeners who might be interested in this book, it is by Mikhail Heller, M-I-K-H-A-I-L, Heller. And I don't believe that it's on the bookshelves today, but I believe that it can be at least from a library or from an Internet book search. And I use ABE Books, and I've found lots of books there. Once again, folks, the book I was referring to is Cogs in the Wheel, and its subtitle is The Formation of Soviet Man. So just as Alan was saying, that at all costs during World War II, Russia or Soviet Union had to be protected and saved.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and really, when you look at our social structure today with the massive bureaucracies we have hanging over us, who are constantly taking over more and more of what we used to do ourselves, for ourselves, which was mainly decision-making, we are run by a world of experts and bureaucrats. And we've moved up from a people who had natural rights, self-evident rights, into a world where we're given privileges. And generally it's licensed privileges. And privileges are something which is granted to you, which can also be taken away.
Yes.
So this is the Soviet system. That's why the children go to little red schoolhouses.
Red brick schoolhouses.
And they are the worker bees, and they have the yellow and black school buses. You know?
The
spelling bees and so on. We are the bees. We are the workers who are helping to bring all of this about over the rest of the world.
As you're talking about this,
mm-hmm.
my thought, and I think maybe the thoughts of at least quite a few of our listeners would be, where do the Jews fit in here?
Well, they're definitely a group who have been created to handle the upper strata of the monetary system, which everything hangs upon. Everything hangs upon the money. That the entire structure of the system hangs upon money.
But given that the, like in the protocols, and I have read this in other writing, where they refer to the Jewish people themselves, people born into that Talmudic so-called religion,
yeah.
That they refer to them as their, quote, lesser brethren.
Yeah.
And they have said in many times and in many ways, we sacrifice our own, you know, to get done what has to get done, like the, quote, persecution of the Jews. But, Alan, my thought has been, you know, when you brought out the fact that it was the royal, quote, royal bloodlines,
yeah.
and they never ruled, they were never the same nationality of the people they ruled.
Mm-hmm.
These are so-called elite today. So are the people who are born into or convert to this thing called Judaism or Talmudism, are they even of the same race, or is it just another mass of people who have been lied to and conditioned to live in, you know, the, oh, you poor persecuted person, and you're God's chosen, and they believe what they have been taught by their rabbis,
yeah.
which, by the way, folks, today's rabbis were yesterday's Pharisees, for any of you who think that, you know, the Jews, well, the Jews gave us Christianity, I guess they did, but it wasn't because Jesus was a Jew.
They didn't really give us Christianity. Christianity was created by another bunch a long ways off from the so-called Holy Land.
Well, I know, but wouldn't it be the same creatures in control, Alan?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
then, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they created... I mean, you see, there were no Jews until the people came out of Babylon. There's
uh-huh.
no history or mention or written to the history of anybody called a Jew.
So the Jewish people in that religion are no different than the Christians who have been lied to and are being used
yeah.
to push this program further.
Yes, and they, because of their indoctrination, they do feel elite above the rest of the people. There's no doubt about it.
They're yes.
told they're special. And they remind me of the English middle class of the 19th century that ruled India. They thought they were the nearest thing to God, you know, because of their indoctrination. It's easy to create elitism and make people feel very smug.
Elitism, uh-huh.
And that's the same technique that's used today on most Jews.
And it's amazing to me today that they've convinced so many Christians that the Jews are God's chosen people.
Yeah.
And that Israel is God's, you know, covenant land to these people. And so that no matter what Israel is doing, it's Israel, we love you, Israel forever. The mind control is just out of this world.
Well, it's Isis, Ra, El, you know.
Isis, Ra, and El.
Yeah, it's the Trinity. It's the same as Ellis Island. The symbol of Jehovah, which is Lucifer, is the Statue of Liberty. And El is. I am El is. Ellis Island. You know,
wow.
The symbols are everywhere.
And Isis was the goddess, the main goddess?
Yeah.
Ra?
That's right.
Oh, who was Ra?
Ra was the sort of the big daddy. He was his place in the Greek, in, for instance, would be Zeus.
So in other words,
Jupiter.
And El was the main god.
El was a god, actually, a Semitic deity that lived outside. It was created outside of the Holy Land and imported it with them, or into the Holy Land. He came along later, you know. Judaism was a compilation of pre-existing stories put into one.
Yes.
And most of it came from Egypt, you know. Most of the stories came from Egypt, and it's all done in allegory. But what it does do is give the rules of their system, including the right to have slaves.
Yes, and that is exactly what Moses Mendelssohn had said. He's in quote that Judaism is not a religion; it is a law, religionized.
That's right. It's nothing but law.
And we're under that law today, Alan.
Well, we've always been under it, really.
Well, I didn't know that.
You see, even Lenin, who should know, because he was taught by the best bankers and Talmudists, he said every civilization has been a form of slavery. That was echoed by Charles Galton Darwin in the next million years, their plans for the next million years. And he said the same thing, that every system that's pre-existed has been a slavery system.
Yes.
And we are in the process of creating a new, more sophisticated form of slavery. And that was printed in the 1950s. So this is a new form of slavery we're under now. And the next step will be the token system I was mentioning earlier when you were gone, where you'll be allocated so many tokens per week. And that way they'll be able to have social control over every individual, because if you buck the system in any way, they'll withdraw your tokens.
Well, either that, the tokens are the impulses on a computer.
Same thing.
Same thing. We're out of our hour here. I'm not going to say we're out of time.
Yeah.
We are out of time. We're out of this world. You will come back tomorrow night.
Sure.
Okay, and ladies and gentlemen, remember, Thursday night, Jeffrey Bennett as guest host. Alan will be back with us tomorrow night, and thank you for being here. And I'm so glad we had a whole hour with you tonight, folks. Alan, thanks so much, always. All right, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, the broadcast you're listening to is brought to you by you, or by those of you who think it's worth keeping on the air. And I'm inviting you to participate. We need you. We'll be back tomorrow night. God bless you, folks. Good night. Good night, Alan.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.